Please be seated. Court is ready to hear argument in 070195 In Re General Electric Company.
Mr. Kuhn will present argument for the relator. The relator has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. At oral argument in the Court of Appeals, virtually every question I received, as well as the argument from the other side, was directed at the procedural issue of whether we could seek mandamus from a denial from a forum nonconvenience motion. This court's November 2nd Pirelli decision has put that issue to rest. So while I'm happy to answer any questions the court may have, it's my intention to direct my comments toward the substantive question of whether or not the MDL court erred here in deciding this motion. Now, opposing counsel would like to shield this decision from any meaningful review by this court by use of the phrase interest of justice.
Does it matter of the health condition of the plaintiff in this condition, whether or not he has a mesothelioma that's going to cause his demise in 1 day or 6 months? Is that a factor to be considered?
It is not a factor, Your Honor. At the time the legislature considered these amendments, opposing counsel showed up and testified, and they asked for exactly this type of exception in these types of cases, and the legislature didn't create it. The legislature has given us statutory factors that we're to look at in forum nonconvenience, and it didn't create a terminal illness exception.
Wasn't that statute designed to prevent this very type of situation from happening?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor.
A plaintiff that has zero contacts with our forum, with our state, to present their claims and cloud the dockets of our courts?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. I think you have to start here with what the legislature's done, because the legislature has made clear that the forum nonconvenience statute should result in dismissal of cases just like this. You know, at one point, Texas forum nonconvenience law threatened to turn us into the courthouse for the world and the laughingstock of the legal community. After the Alfaro decision, the legislature came back and made clear that they intended FNC motions to apply and the statute to apply in personal injury actions. Over the next several sessions, the legislature again and again amended the act to make it clear. In 1997, the legislature deleted the asbestos exception. In 2003, the legislature removed the permissive may language and replaced it with shall to make it clear that when it weighs it, the court was required, it was directed to decline jurisdiction or dismiss. Again, in 2005, when they made the amendments, in that case, they took out the remaining may and replaced it with shall to make it clear that the factors that had to be weighed were mandatory.
B3 is one of those factors, and have you really demonstrated a substantial injustice if the dismissal on that forum nonconvenience weren't granted?
Your Honor, I would say that if we have it in this case, there never will be a case.
Well, what is the substantial? I want to know exactly what is the substantial injustice.
Your Honor, I think it's demonstrated by the factors that are laid out for the court under the public and private interests. In this case, everything that has to do with this case is in Maine.
Except that you have at least three defendants that are Texas residents, right?
That's right, Your Honor, but that's not a forum fact. I mean, during the Pirelli argument, Justice O'Neill from the bench made this distinction in response to the same kind of argument. No one here is disputing there's jurisdiction in Texas for this case. The question is whether or not this is the proper forum. And there's a difference between jurisdictional facts.
So they're substantially prejudiced because people have to travel to Maine? Is that it?
Your Honor, we won't be able to compel witnesses to come from Maine to get here. We won't be able to view the premises. We won't be able to do anything you're allowed to do. I mean, what you'll be essentially saying is that we're being forced to trial in Texas by deposition with no ability to compel any production in Texas of any witness. I mean, the phrase, the substantial prejudice, obviously, just like the interest of justice, is somewhat amorphous. But the only thing I can say, Your Honor, and what we said in the briefing is, these are the factors, these are the facts in this case. And if this isn't that case, there never will be one. If you look at what the legislature did, and even the district court, it's worth pointing out, at the August 25th hearing, admitted that the entire purpose of the legislative enactment was to prevent cases like this from being filed in Texas that had no connection to the state. A denial from a forum nonconvenience motion, as this court says, reviewed under abuse of discretion. Now, in Pirelli at footnote 3, the court noted that under the current version of the statute, those factors are mandatory. And that same point was made in the concurrence and in the dissent. Plainly understood, in deciding a forum nonconvenience motion, The district court does not have discretion to ignore the statutory factors. In this case, the district court abused its discretion by failing to give weight to the mandatory factors listed in 71.051 and instead buying into the ill-advised attempt to help the Richards avoid federal court. Under the doctrine of expressio unis est exclusio ulterioris, we know that when the legislature has defined for us what those factors are to be considered, that any other factors should be excluded. And it was pointed out by Justice Mendia beginning, there is no exception for terminal illness cases.
What was the evidence about what's the problem in federal courts in Maine?
You know, there was no actual evidence. What they relied on, what the district court relied on, were some opinions that were filed in other cases pointing out that it's slower. And we have
How slow is the federal MDL?
Your Honor, the MDL is under transition. The federal MDL is under transition. It's under new leadership.
The answer is much, much slower. What has been happening in Texas is a much, much faster, quicker, expedited review than typically what happens in the federal system. Isn't that correct?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor. And if you want to look at it, I mean, we believe what you should be looking at is Maine, and you shouldn't be considering whether or not this case will be removed. We don't know if it ever will be removed, if it ever will even be filed in Maine. But let's say that it is. Let's say you want to take that into consideration. There is absolutely no way to rule that the federal model is an inadequate forum. You said in Pirelli that a court was adequate, and of course Pirelli was talking about Mexico, and you recognize that Mexico doesn't recognize the same rights to a tort plaintiff. But you cited approvingly the language from the Fifth Circuit Vasquez case, and you pointed out that just because another jurisdiction might make different policy decisions about how to resolve tort disputes doesn't make it inadequate. What all this boils down to, Your Honor, when you talk about how it's slower in federal court, is historically the federal MDL pushes a settlement model before trial. No one is ultimately denied trial in the federal court. They challenged the constitutionality of the federal MDL and went up to the Third Circuit, and the Third Circuit denied that argument. Surely there is more of a push by the federal MDL to encourage settlement than what we see from our judge in Texas.
Well, the cases are filed there, and you just never hear about them again. And I think the legislature, the way they crafted the statute and the way this court, with the help of the advisory committee, promulgated the rules, it seems to have been an effective system, more so, much more so than federal side.
Your Honor, it may be that we're better than the federal system. It may be, but that's not the question. I mean, it would be the height of judicial arrogance for us to say, there's no stronger defender than Texas courts or this court than I am, but it would be the height of judicial arrogance for us to say simply because the federal model is different.
You don't have to argue this, but if you're going to argue it, our system is better, whether that's arrogant to say or not. But the question under Pirelli is, does that make it inadequate? And I thought that's where you were headed.
That is where I'm headed, Your Honor. And if you look at Pirelli, what it says, citing Vasquez, is that alternative forum is about if the parties will not be treated unfairly, even though they may not enjoy the same benefits as they receive in an American court. We cannot say, and no one can say, that the federal courts are inadequate to resolve the disputes of non-Texans. That's never been found in any court in any decision until now. And this court, it's not a valid finding.
And you're aware of any case that has ever held the United States federal court system as an inadequate forum?
No, Your Honor. I just received yesterday afternoon a filing that I believe the court got last week about a case out of Washington. It was an additional authority. I believe it's the Sales case. And in the Sales case, the appellate court, without any real analysis, said that you could have conditioned, it was in Arkansas, everything happened in Arkansas, but they filed in Washington State, and they said you could condition it on a require it not be removed. They didn't ever hold that the federal court was inadequate in that case, but I will tell the court that the Washington Supreme Court has granted review in that case. It's set for argument November 29th, and a big distinction between Washington and Texas is that Washington works under without a statute. And it's based on simply the common law. But I don't expect Washington to uphold that decision in the long run anyway. And there the only issue is, can they condition it on this, and is that constitutional? Let me say, Your Honor, too, about this consideration, this concern about the idea of being filed in federal court. It's pure supposition of whether or not this case will end up in federal court. It was discussed in the rehearing argument between the district court and opposing counsel was the Losey case. In the Losey case, the court granted a form nonconvenience motion and ordered it to be dismissed because he said it should be filed in Connecticut. Well, the plaintiffs didn't refile in Connecticut. They came back and refiled in Delaware, ostensibly to avoid federal removal. We have no assurance that if this case is refiled, it will be filed in Maine. And we have no assurance if it's filed in Maine that it will be removed or even removable. We're not here, Your Honor, because we're afraid of Maine courts. We're here because we can't have a Texas MDL court decide that it is a place to require defendants to waive their federal rights. We have a right to seek a federal forum, and the state court should not be a place to abrogate that right.
Well, how has Judge Davidson required you to do that?
Because Judge Davidson has said that he would grant the motion. He would rule properly on this motion if we would agree that
it was withdrawn.
Well, Your Honor, he also said in open court, I know the letter that of an explanation, it wasn't an order, it was simply a letter, was withdrawn. But he said in open court that the only reason he would deny this motion was because of the potential of removal. And the other side has admitted in their briefs that all we had to do was agree that this case wouldn't be removed and he would grant the motion. So I don't think there's really even any issue here that that's was the ultimatum that was given to us that we refused.
Well, in Pirelli, the defendants agreed to waive any statute of limitations. So there are conditions that a trial court can set, and the statute says under C that the court may set terms and conditions for staying or dismissing as the interest of justice may require, giving due regard to the interest of the party. So what standard are we to use there that would preclude the trial court from setting a condition such as we're talking about the trial court included here?
Sure, Your Honor. And let me begin by saying that in Pirelli you mentioned the limitations, but there was also the return jurisdiction clause.
Right.
And we have no problem with those standard things that are used that when there is a removal.
My question was, sure. What standard is it, if you have any suggestion,
sure,
should be used under C for setting those conditions?
Right, absolutely, Your Honor. And what I want to say is that when it uses the phrase interest of justice in C, it's already told us in B that for interest of justice and convenience of the party, these are the factors you have to consider. So when it reuses that same phrase in C, what it's telling us is you can set those conditions necessary to make sure there's not a change in those factors in B. And that would include a limitation defense, that we can't go to Maine and then argue, oh, because you didn't file in Maine until now. Obviously, that would be an unjust result because it would be penalizing them. We have no problem with that. But what you can't do is set an unconstitutional condition. And that's what has happened in this case.
Why is it an unconstitutional condition? You still have a right to litigate. You have a right to litigate in Texas courts.
Right, Your Honor, but it's not about our right to litigate. It's not our right about the trial. It's about our right to removal to the federal forum. And under the Supremacy Clause, if Congress gives us the right to remove, which is what's been waived in this case, or what's been requested we waive, if this case is refiled in Maine and it's subject to removal, the state court in Texas nor the state legislature can make us give up that right. There's a case I wanted to cite to the court.
Well, but the only result of that is you have a choice. You have a full, fair choice, it seems. The legislature has provided it by statute that the case can be filed here. We discussed that in Pirelli, the Alfaro 031, as I recall. You can file it here. Now, why is it, if you're given a choice, that is not something the trial court can force you to make or assume jurisdiction again?
Because it's an insult to the Supremacy Clause, and the state, no matter what it does, cannot take away our right to removal. If you look at, there's a case I want to cite, Donovan v. City of Dallas, 377 U.S. 408. And in that case, this court granted a mandamus and ordered a trial judge to enjoin parties from filing a suit in federal court. The U.S. Supreme Court took that case and reversed, and it said it's impermissible for a state court to enjoin a party from proceeding in federal court.
But they're not enjoining you here. They're giving you a choice. Stay in Texas or agree that you won't go to federal court. They're not enjoining you.
They're conditioning our right to a decision on a state court motion based on our agreement to waive federal rights. And that a state cannot do. If you look at the Kansas public employee case that's cited in the brief. In that case, they used severance. The parties tried to use severance to avoid a case being removed to federal court. And they said, you can't reach it because under state procedure, we severed out that part of a case. Went up to the Eighth Circuit. What the Eighth Circuit said, it's well established the courts can't directly or indirectly prevent, defeat, or limit the free exercise of the right to removal. As soon as Congress gives us that right, the state legislature nor the state courts can come back and force us to give up that right if and when it vests.
Further questions? Thank you, Counselor. Court is ready to hear argument from the real parties in interest.
May it please the court, Mr. Siegel will present argument for the real parties in interest.
Mr. Siegel, does this constitutional argument have any basis here, or is it just a red herring?
It's a red herring to us, Your Honor. We don't see
the court.
Judge Davidson did not, nor could he, restrict the defendant's right to remove any case anywhere. Of course, their time to remove the Texas case has come and gone. It's, of course, not the case at all that Judge Davidson could issue any order in Texas that could restrict anything the parties do in Maine. The only thing that Judge Davidson did is recognizing the indisputable nature of the federal MDL, and of course it, and I want to...
But if, I mean, a frequent condition on these FMC cases is waive any objections to personal jurisdiction in Maine or wherever, right?
Yes.
And if they waive that in Texas, there's no question a court in Maine would enforce that.
Actually, Your Honor, we pointed out a case that our firm had. It's treated in one of our footnotes, or I believe it's in a footnote, it may be in text, a case called the Dory case in which the defendants simply reneged on their promise to waive personal jurisdiction objections
in
Texas.
Let me perhaps rephrase. 99% of the time, Maine is going to enforce, if you waive a right on the record in a Texas court, they're going to enforce that somewhere else in the United States.
Yes, I expressed myself the wrong way. It is true that a Maine court presumably would look at the conditions, look at the commitments made in the earlier court. That's true. Did this operate in some unconstitutional way? No, it didn't. To me, the analysis is, did the defendants have any constitutional right to a forum nonconvenience dismissal in the first place? Of course not. They didn't, because the U.S. Supreme Court has held that a state is constitutionally free to reject forum nonconvenience doctrine altogether. And, of course, that was the situation that prevailed in Texas for most of the last century.
Is there anything in the interest of justice that requires this case to be tried in Texas rather than up in Maine, where the guy lived? He lived and worked his whole life in Maine, right?
Your Honor, I would answer by your use of the word try. Yes, if the case were kept in Texas, there was a chance that it would be tried before Mr. Richards died.
Right, but that's the only reason in the interest of justice we shouldn't send this guy, this Maine guy with his Maine problems, to Maine to let the people of Maine try that.
No, I mean I've argued in our brief that it would have been a perfectly plausible decision for Judge Davidson to deny this forum nonconvenience motion without regard to the unique circumstances of
MDL
and Mr. Richards' exigent health. They have not demonstrated any compelling inconvenience in my opinion. There are three defendants headquartered in this case in Texas. That's, of course, a great distinction from Pirelli, where there was only a nominal defendant, the company that owned the car, I think, for 11 days and then sold it.
He does say that, as in Pirelli, he can't make anyone from Maine come to Texas to testify in front of a jury, and I think most lawyers who've tried lawsuits recognize the difference between reading a deposition to a jury or even showing a video and putting someone on the stand for the jury to see them cross-examined.
Your Honor, I think the best way I can answer this is by reference to the other letter I sent the court before argument, the letter dated November 12th, in which I simply reviewed our recent cases. My firm is Waters and Krauss, where I guess we're one of the prominent plaintiff's firms handling asbestos cases in Texas. I've listed five cases that were all dismissed on forum nonconvenience grounds. Then I've listed involving out-of-state residents and out-of-state exposure to asbestos. Then I've listed 11 cases also involving out-of-state residents and out-of-state exposure to Texas in which no forum nonconvenience motion was ever made. And so we know that the defendants utilize the doctrine of forum nonconvenience as a purely tactical matter in those cases in which they think they might be better off in the foreign forum
as opposed to Texas. Just like plaintiffs from Maine choose to sue in Texas as a purely tactical
matter. Absolutely.
They think it's better for them.
Of course. And there's nothing wrong with...
But we don't care, as a court, we're not trying to decide, gosh, this is going to be a great case for the plaintiff or a great case for the defendant. We're not interested in your technical advantage. We're interested in the argument, why should Texas juries and courts and appeals courts be trying cases for people that are up in Maine having car wrecks and getting asbestos disease and stuff like that? Maine's a good state to do that.
All I can say, Your Honor, is that had the legislature decided that no out-of-state claims should be brought in Texas, they would have said that.
Were those other claims that you cited, were those mesothelioma claims?
All of them. Each and every one of them. And the only reason, the only point of my letter, of course, was to undermine the assertion that these cases are indefensible if the plaintiff and the exposure witnesses are out of state. Of course they're defensible. They're simply defensible in Texas when the defendants prefer to defend them in Texas. Now, what we know goes on in the MDL is that Judge Davidson has made it very clear that his customary ruling will be, in any case in which the defendants choose to avail themselves of the motion because they decide it's better to defend the case elsewhere, that he will grant such a motion. And, of course, that's the reason I cited the first list of cases, was to show that there is no plague of out-of-state cases. All there is a bunch of out-of-state cases that the defendants choose to defend here. And when they decide they prefer to defend it elsewhere, Judge Davidson sends them packing. There has been one case, and one case only, that I'm aware of or that they have ever cited to this court or to the Court of Appeals or to Judge Davidson, in which he has denied a forum nonconvenience motion, and it's this one.
What discretion does the trial court have, if any, in these mandatory forum cases such as this one?
Your Honor, as I said, the legislature well could have said you cannot file a claim in Texas unless you are a Texas resident.
He has these six factors to consider.
Right. And then he must decide whether the facts as presented will, in light of those facts, will a dismissal serve the interests of justice? And all Judge Davidson did is decide that in this unique case, it would not serve the interests of justice to send Mr. Richards and Mrs. Richards packing to the forum in which there are 38,000 other cases pending and which nothing ever happens.
What makes it more likely that his case will be tried in Texas than either in Maine or in the federal MDL?
Well, under the Texas MDL procedures for asbestos cases set up by Judge Davidson, there is a mandatory fast track for exigent cases. And by the way, the legislature could have, in its extensive restructuring of the asbestos litigation and in the MDL enabling statute, it certainly could have said, don't bring an out-of-state asbestos claim here.
Does Judge Wiener still preside over the MDL in Eastern District, Pennsylvania?
He passed away about a year and a half ago, and it's now in front of Judge Giles. And it's no derogation of Judge Giles or his efforts. It's just the simple reality that results when there are 38,000 cases parked in front of one judge.
I hesitate to ask this question, but it's in the case. So the your client does not survive this process, this mandamus, what happens to the case?
He has now passed away.
When?
It was, I want to say in the spring of this year, maybe the summer. I could supply the exact date for the court.
Counsel.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
What's the impact of that on the case?
The acute exigence that was important to Judge Davidson is gone. Does it make sense now that the case has been pending for over 2 years in Texas to pull up the drawbridge and now send it to the MDL? We say not.
Well, but question is, does it Are you aware of any case where anybody's ever said the U.S. federal courts are an adequate forum?
No, and that would be preposterous.
So does it make sense in a case, if this is the only one, that we should – you're asking – I mean, that's what you're asking us precisely to say.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. Judge Davidson didn't say that the U.S. federal court system is an inadequate forum.
He
and, of course,
that black hole.
That would be preposterous. He said that, and four other federal judges have said that.
But what does black hole mean?
It means a case in which, despite everyone's best efforts,
can't escape its gravity.
You can't escape its gravity. And I should add that among the 38,000 cases pending in the federal MDL are thousands and thousands and thousands of mesothelioma cases.
And the Third Circuit Federal Court of Appeals has instructed that the sick and the dying and the widows and the survivors should have their claims addressed first. In Amici, in briefing, and you know, we can go look at the numbers ourselves, say that by 2006, nearly 75,000 of the 110,000 cases in the MDL had been resolved and caused the federal MDL, or describes it as having an impressive track record. Now, you may still say that Texas is better, and we'll take that as a compliment. But I guess, again, the question is, why can't justice be done in the federal system?
Your Honor, I think it was not a clear abuse of discretion. And, of course, in the context we're here today on, it doesn't only have to be an abuse of discretion. It has to be a clear abuse of discretion.
Well, that was the question I was going to a while ago. What's the difference between this case and Prilly? I dissented in that, and I lost that case because I thought it was not an abuse of discretion, and the court held it. What's the difference between this case and the facts and the factors in this case? Because in Pirelli, we had the truck that went through Texas. Here, we don't have a truck that went through Texas.
No, you do have three non-nominal defendants headquartered here who made their tortious decisions here. These are not defendants like the defendant in Pirelli that the plaintiff non-suited. These are three straightforward defendants.
There were some Texas defendants in Pirelli. They non-suited. So you have the defendants that are here in Texas. So what else differentiates this from Pirelli?
It was the trial judge's recognition that that it's not really about convenience. It's not about any of that. It's about flushing the case down the federal MDL black hole so that it'll never be heard. And again,
And the trial court in Pirelli could have decided it may never have been heard in Mexico either. And that may be the reason that trial court didn't want to send it to Mexico.
It might have been, Your Honor, but I think I do have to emphasize the basic distinction between an American citizen as plaintiff and a Mexican citizen as plaintiff, and a lot of what
that's true. But there's also a big difference between us saying we're not so sure about the Mexican courts versus we're not so sure about those federal courts.
Your Honor, it simply was not an indictment of the federal system as a system for handling tort cases. If the defendants had said, we'll consent, we'd like this case moved to the federal district court in Maine, fine. But that's not what they're saying. They're saying, we don't want it moved to the Maine state court. So we know that all of this business about convenience and all of that is kind of hollow. We don't even want it moved to the Maine federal district court. No, we want it flushed down the black hole. And in fact, we so clearly and insistently want that that we simply refuse to stipulate that we won't remove the case. If they were really concerned about the convenience of witnesses, if that had any true merit, wouldn't they simply have made that stipulation? No, they want a forum nonconvenience dismissal and a second attempt to remove the case.
Counsel, it does seem that the state MDL is moving along pretty well, doing well. The judges are keeping the docket moving. What's your answer to the concern that the precedent set by such a decision could open the gates wider than the legislature intended?
I think my answer is that in the significant amount of time since Judge Davidson has made this decision, There has been no other such case. All of these cases that I've listed, and presumably many other cases from many other plaintiffs' firms, have continued to be dismissed. This is a truly unusual situation. The only reason we're in this situation is because there simply was no viable defendant to sue in Maine, which is not usually the case, and in fact is hardly ever the case. And I'll tell the court, doing our jobs as plaintiffs' lawyers, we look long and hard for a viable Maine defendant to sue, and there simply wasn't one. That and that situation, there was one local company that the plaintiff had some testimony about in his deposition, and that company is bankrupt. And so this is simply truly a very rare situation. And again, we don't know how the Washington Supreme Court is going to rule. It may affirm the intermediate appellate court's ruling, as this court sometimes does, or it may not. But at least the Washington Court of Appeals has said that what Judge Davidson did is not strange. It's not a clear abuse of discretion. In fact, it was an abuse of discretion not to do what Judge Davidson did, simply recognizing that in the reality of the reality posed by the unfortunate state of the federal MDL, and again, this is not plaintiff's advocacy, it's not Judge Davidson talking, it's the chief federal district judge in Maine, it's the federal district judge in Mississippi, it's Judge Kent in Galveston, it's now in the other supplemental case I submitted, one of the federal judges in Massachusetts. All of them recognize this practical reality, and it is no impugning of the federal system.
But in which of those enumerated factors is that black hole argument?
Convenient. It would be. I would say 71015051B, in the interest of justice and for the convenience of the parties. The parties. It doesn't say defendants. It says parties. That must include the plaintiffs, and we told Judge Davidson it would be highly inconvenient for him to die.
So it's in the interest of justice, but it's not in any of the factors.
No, but it is. It is in the sort of prefatory statement, and of course it would also
sort of boilerplate precatory language, but not in the listed statutorily enumerated.
Also be covered by B5, the balance of the private interests of the parties and the public, and was not. And
you argue B1.
I'm sorry.
You argue B1.
Your Honor, I also argued in our brief and to Judge Davidson that they simply had not met their showing under any of these. And was it an abuse of discretion for Judge Davidson to conclude, perhaps to think to himself, gee, is there a substantial injustice being worked here? Well, I know there isn't because they frequently defend these out-of-state cases here. And then he might further have concluded that this man is dying of mesothelioma, or perhaps now he would conclude, or you all could conclude, that this case has been pending a long time. It would be nice for Mrs. Richards not to have to go back to the end of the line in Pennsylvania. Is that a clear abuse of discretion? This is a judge who routinely sends these cases packing whenever the defendants decide they want them sent
back. But the judge said why he was not going to send this one. Does that affect, or do we have to speculate, or what standard do we use for deciding why he did or did not send it when he made a specific statement? And in your brief here on page 12, you say the reason for the denial was the fact that what would happen down the line is a removal.
This court may affirm or deny relief on any basis argued. And I think if the court is uncomfortable or if the court feels that there's something unseemly about the implied criticism of federal courts, and we say it's not a criticism of the federal system entirely, just this one proceeding. It's not even a criticism. It's simply a recognition.
It's just a process.
It's just a process. Then the court may also look at the other points we have asserted. For instance.
But didn't he say that he would send it but for that?
Yes, he did. Yeah. And, of course, again, if they were really interested in the convenience of trial in Maine and the ability to call witnesses and present them live instead of by deposition, and if that's what this was really all about, wouldn't they have signed this stipulation?
But there is the problem. It's one thing for us to think, we don't like the way they do things in Alabama, and we wouldn't do them that way. It's another thing to say, and because we don't like the way they do things in Alabama, Alabama people can all come over here and sue. But wouldn't the people of Alabama be a little maybe somebody a little offended by that?
I don't think...
And, I mean, part of this deal is not that we're going to go to war with Alabama or Maine, but that we just don't want to be stepping on each other's toes unnecessarily.
I don't think there was anything wrong with Judge Davidson simply echoing a... I mean, was it unseemly for the federal judge in Maine to make this observation? Was it unseemly for the other three federal judges we cited?
Well, it's part of his system. I mean, the federal MDL is part of the federal court system. And, it, you know, it's one thing for us to complain about what's going on in the Texas system because we have some responsibility for it.
But
for us to start complaining about somebody else's system, it's a little different, isn't it?
In this context, I just respectfully disagree, Your Honor, because, it was simply, do the interests of justice in these unusual narrow circumstances, will they be served by dismissal? I might also ask, if it's okay, it's hard for me to think of what possible kind of denial of a forum nonconvenience motion could ever be upheld if this case is reversed. I mean, again, the legislature did not forbid all out-of-state plaintiffs or all out-of-state asbestos cases from being filed in Texas. It continues to employ a discretionary forum nonconvenience standard, which necessarily means, at least I think it does, that occasionally a judge will deny a motion. What type of case might result in a permissible denial if this doesn't?
Further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Just to answer the question the chief raised during the other side, I was just handed an obituary from the Bangor Daily News that says that the plaintiff passed away on August 19th the other night.
And does that have any?
Doesn't have any impact at all. We've always said, Your Honor, to the trial court, the MDL court, the nature of these cases, this is not a unique case. I mean, he testified to the legislature exactly this. All of these cases are the same. All of these cases present when the individual is facing a terminal illness, which is going to happen soon. We couldn't have gotten this case in trial any sooner in Texas than they could have in Maine. And if there's any delay in this case, which delay is unfortunate in any case, it's because the plaintiff, or more particular, the plaintiff's attorneys, encouraged him to file a lawsuit in a jurisdiction that had absolutely nothing to do with his case, 2,000 miles from where it belonged. If he had filed this case in Maine, I don't know if it would have been removable or not, but it would have proceeded along the route it should have gone along. And every case is going to be like that. Now, there haven't been any other forum nonconvenient cases since this one was decided because they've either been agreed to by the other side, granted, or in some instances they haven't been raised. But the idea that a defendant doesn't push a forum nonconvenience in some other case doesn't have anything to do with the factors the legislature has specifically enumerated for us to consider. And he tells you now. He tells you it's not one of those factors. It just falls under this nebulous condition. And actually, let me back up there. The court did not condition under C. It didn't do that. It asked at one point if we thought it could, and we told it it couldn't for the same reasons he can't consider it under B, the same constitutional issues. But it didn't. It decided it under B. He just said, in the interest of justice, the statute says interest of justice, I'm going to deny this motion. And that is not a valid factor the legislature has enumerated.
There's nothing in that statute that says out-of-state plaintiffs can't file their cases here.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I couldn't.
There's nothing in the statute that precludes out-of-state plaintiffs.
The legislature shouldn't have to do that. I mean, this is really about the point that the court made, and it was Justice Heck's Section 3 of the Prudential Opinion. This is about the prudent use of mandamus to control the courts, to make them do what they're intended to do. If we don't do it in this case, if we can't govern ourselves in this case, what's going to happen? The legislature, what else can they do? They're going to have to come back in and amend. You know, if it wasn't for the mandamus ruling, they would have to make interlocutory appeal in every case. And the legislature has to say at this point, what else can we tell you, courts, that we don't want this lawsuit being brought in Texas? On the constitutional question, I don't think it's a red herring at all. I think it's an important constitutional issue. The court doesn't need to reach it because the court can just look at the factors as it did in Pirelli and say, under these factors, and of course Pirelli, one big difference, Your Honor, that you asked about, is Pirelli was under the old statute. Pirelli was under the May. Now we have the shall, right? If anything, in this case, it's more compelling. And in Pirelli, the tire was sold in Texas on a vehicle in Texas. Here we don't have any venue facts. There's no forum facts that make this an appropriate place to bring this lawsuit. He admits in open court. He admits to this court. He admitted to the Court of Appeals. We're here because he's forum shopping. He's here to avoid federal
removal. That's not a proper reason under the statute. The legislature could have created that. We would have brought it up, and it probably would be reversed by the federal courts.
Well, how is the federal district in Pennsylvania any more convenient to your client than Texas?
Your Honor, we won't be tried. This case won't be tried if it goes to trial in Pennsylvania. The MDL court is a pretrial court. It'll be sent back to the district court in Maine to be tried if it's eventually tried.
It'll go back there for some proceeding, and right?
Their argument is that when you go to the MDL court, which is the pretrial court, just like our MDL court in Houston, you don't get out quick enough. That's their argument. And it's not that it won't be tried in – and, Your Honor, as I said again, we're not saying this case won't be tried in Maine. What we're saying is no one's afraid of Maine. The point is that this MDL court – and he said so in his letter that he withdrew, but we all know what it is, and it's the whole purpose of the MDL court. His ruling here is what he's going to say in every case going forward. Is Texas going to be used as a venue for plaintiffs to come to force defendants to waive their right to removal? That's not a proper purpose for our state to act, and that's not what the legislature intended.
But according to your position is the record will show that these six factors are proved conclusively, and the trial court did not dismiss or stay conditioned on anything. We're simply here because your position is these are conclusively proved, as in Pirelli, and that the trial court had no discretion to deny.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. It's the point that Justice Willett made in the concurrence in Pirelli. Texas has no dog in this fight. And if the only connection that you can give us, the most consequential connection, is the decision to sue here, then little more need be said. This case simply does not belong in our courts.
Other than the defendants that, in this case, do in fact reside here and are still in the case.
Your Honor, when they name 27, 28, 100 defendants in these asbestos cases, there will always be defendants in almost every jurisdiction if they want them. The point is, that's not a venue decision. That's not a forum decision. That's a jurisdictional decision. And I don't dispute you have jurisdiction. As a manufacturer, jurisdiction is going to be had just about everywhere. The point is, it's not a proper forum decision.
Further questions?
Question, Chief. As to the science of mesothelioma, years ago it was the case that after diagnosis, unfortunately, persons afflicted with mesothelioma lived maybe another year and a half. And then I saw a case, actually presided over it as a trial judge, where there had been a diagnosis, I think more than 6 or 7 years of mesothelioma. And the person, plaintiff, appeared in trial and in court. What's the science now, the life expectancy after diagnosis? Do you know?
I'm afraid I'd be subject to a Havner or Dobner challenge on that, Your Honor. But I will tell you, though, the amount of time has extended dramatically. I think cases have recognized that. But our point is just that it's not really a valid consideration. If the legislature had intended to have some sort of indigent circumstances or, you know, pending death exception, they were asked to do that. They didn't do it, and that should be the end of it.
Any further questions? The cause is submitted. That concludes the arguments for this morning, and the marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise.